Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 13th of May. The Pew Research Center has done an interesting study published at the end of April. It's a different look at generations and partisanship. And the material reads, over the past decade, pronounced age gaps in American politics, with younger Americans having been the Democratic Party's strongest supporters in both vote preferences and partisanship, older voters have been the most reliably Republican. It hasn't always been the case that younger generations are more Democratic. Two decades ago, the youngest adults, Generation X, were the most Republican, while the oldest, greatest generation were the most Democratic. And the political climate of early adulthood may continue to influence the political tilt of a generation throughout its lifespan. As you look at your voting record, have you voted pretty much the same for your whole life? If you're young, are you Democratic? If you are a baby boomer, an older baby boomer, are you Democratic? If you're a Generation Xer or an older millennial, are you Republican? We'll be talking about the Pew Studies report, and a little bit later in the hour, we'll speak with a guest who's been with us before who believes the voting age should be lowered to the age of 17. That should be interesting. And we'll welcome your phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and the Twitter account is at K Dunn Show. Right? I say that so often, you forget it sometimes. How do you spell that? It's a word that you've spelled all the time. Jocelyn Kiley is our guest, the first half hour of the show, Associate Director of Research for the Pew Research Center. She primarily works on U.S. public opinion about politics. She's a principal investigator of the center's work on political polarization in the American public, as well as its regular election polling. Jocelyn, thank you so much for being with us. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. I found this interesting that the political climate of early adulthood may continue to influence the political tilt of a generation throughout its lifespan. Why are those early years so important?
Well, there's a lot of academic work on this subject. Some of it comes down to what your political preferences are when you're young. They carry through. So if you register as a Democrat, if you vote for Democrats, that has an imprint. Now, that doesn't mean it's immutable. People do change party identification, and there are you know, that happens at an individual level as well as at the generational level. But you see some imprint of those early times. So, you know, generations that came of age when there were popular Democratic presidents tended to vote more Democratic than other generations throughout their lifespan, and conversely, generations that came of age during popular Republican presidencies tended to vote a little bit more Republican.
I found that to be fascinating. So who was president when you were of voting age became very important. If you were coming of age during Ronald Reagan's time, you might be more likely to be a Republican. If you came of age during Richard Nixon's time, you might be more likely to be a Democrat.
That's right. Now, again, I think we can overstate this. You know, to be sure, there are many Democrats who came of age during Ronald Reagan's
sure.
presidency, and many Republicans who came of age during Nixon's presidency. But you do see a hint of the influence of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start with millennials. You, in the report, say that millennials of all ages, young millennials, older millennials, favor the Democratic Party by large margins. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think to some extent what we saw with the oldest millennials, so when millennials were first coming of age, that they were strong supporters of the Democratic Party, and that may be they came of age towards the end of the Bush administration at a time when George W. Bush was viewed relatively poorly. His favorability ratings, his approval ratings were poor. And then we've seen that happen as younger millennials come of age. We've also seen them come in identifying more as Democrats than as Republicans. At least in the early years of the Obama administration and during the Obama campaign, there was a lot of enthusiasm about his campaign and his presidency from the youngest people. So we've actually seen a fairly large age gap in party ID and vote preference over the last couple of years, as you mentioned. So, you know, one of the questions is where is the next generation coming in? And one of the things that we did in our most recent report is really take a look at party ID at a more granular level. And one of the things that we're seeing is that even though younger millennials are far more Democratic than most other generations, they're a little bit less Democratic than millennials who are a little bit older, who came of age during that time when Bush was viewed poorly and Obama was viewed very favorably, and many of them were excited about an Obama campaign.
And when you're talking about younger millennials, what age are you looking at?
We're looking at those who are about 18 to 23 or 24 today.
Mm-hmm. You also looked at the reflection of differences in racial and ethnic composition with non-whites who tend to be more Democratic. Is that the case? And if so, how much? And is it across all generations?
Well, it's true that on the whole, non-whites are much more Democratic than whites. So some of the most reliably Democratic groups are African Americans and Asians and Hispanics. And that's true of all, across all generations. So, for instance, overall, about 80% of blacks either identify as Democrats or lean to the Democratic Party, while only 11% identify as Republican or lean to the Republican Party. So that's a huge gap. It's a little bit less so among Asians and Hispanics, but still majorities of Asians and Hispanics identify as Democrats or lean Democratic. And one of the questions that's often raised when we talk about generation is the reason that we're seeing that millennials are more Democratic, that millennials are also less likely to be white. So younger generations are more ethnically and racially diverse. So is that some of what's going on here? And I think the answer in our data is that's some of what's going on here, but it's not all. So even if you just look at the party ID of whites across the generations, white millennials are more Democratic than whites in older generations.
Mm-hmm. But Republicans, you say, hold an 8.6% lead in partisan identification Republican, and that's based on the year of birth. So if you're a millennial, 50-50 perhaps, but if you're older, whites hold the lead among all other groups, would you say?
Yes. So overall, Republicans have an about 8 or 9 point point lead among. About 8 point lead among whites as a whole. So that advantage is a little bit bigger among older whites, and it's smaller among younger whites.
Mm-hmm. And some of these generations cover a lot of years. When you look at the baby boom generation, 46 to, I believe, 64, older boomers consistently more likely to vote Democratic than younger members of that generation. What's behind those statistics?
Well, I think it goes back a little bit to what we were talking about before, that older, when the social environment in which boomers came of age. So older boomers came of age in, to some extent, the Kennedy and Johnson administrations and the Nixon administrations, whereas younger boomers came of age during the Ford and Carter administrations and the Reagan administration. So older boomers came of age at a time with generally positive views of Democratic presidents, at least with respect to Kennedy, and a negative experience with a Republican president, Nixon. And so we see a little bit of an imprint of their Democratic tilt throughout their lives, whereas younger boomers who came of age during the Carter administration and also the Reagan administration, so a time with an unpopular Democratic president and a very popular Republican president, we saw these younger boomers coming in and identifying a little bit more Republican and carrying that forward in their vote preferences.
And when you look at, many of them are not with us anymore, members of the Greatest Generation who lived during the Depression and during the years of FDR, did they remain wildly Democratic and substantially Democratic for their lifetimes?
I might not say wildly, but they remained on average more Democratic throughout their lifetimes. So many of them are not with us anymore, and so we can't report on those in the Greatest Generation anymore in our data, but we can look back at our opinion polls in the 90s and see that they were the most Democratic generation 20 years ago, and we saw that throughout the 90s, that they often were the most Democratic overall in their party identification and in their vote preferences. And certainly on certain kinds of social policies, you really saw that Democratic imprint, particularly on things having to do with the social safety net.
So when we think about this common, perhaps it's a myth, that when you're young, you're liberal, the older you get, the more conservative you are, is not true.
I think it's certainly fair to say that it's more complicated than that. Now, we're talking about data that's at the aggregate level, so generations on average. But as you said at the beginning, 20 years ago, it was the youngest people who were the most Republican. And if you track these generations, you actually don't see that much aggregate change. So it's not the case that, say, Generation Xers have gotten more Republican over time. They've essentially stayed the same or responded to changes over time. So the country as a whole is actually a little bit more Democratic today than it was 20 years ago. And we see that Generation Xers, you know, if you just look at those numbers, they were 42% Democrats and Democratic leaners in 1994, and they're 49% Democrats and Democratic leaners today. So that's a case where certainly, on the whole, there's no evidence that generation has become more Republican or become more conservative. If anything, it's gone in the other direction.
And how do you factor in, a huge number of Americans say they're independent now, how do you factor in independent voters?
Well, some of what we're talking about here in our data are people who either are or lean towards a party. You're absolutely right that there's been a complementary rise, that more and more Americans identify as independent than they have in the past, and we certainly see that happening even more with younger generations. So millennials are the most likely to identify as independent. On the other hand, you know, a lot of research, ours, academic research from other polling organizations, show that even though more people identify as independents, there isn't really evidence that more people are behaving as independents, meaning that there's more and more kind of down the line, there's more and more down the line party voting than there was in the past. And so some of this suggests there's a term people use called closet partisans, where many people want to say that they're independent, perhaps because they're dissatisfied with political process. And there's certainly a lot of that right now. But then in fact, many people who lean towards the Republican Party behave very similarly in their voting behavior and their political attitudes to Republicans, and the same thing on the Democratic side.
We're going to welcome phone calls to hear the stories behind these numbers. Interesting study done by the Pew Research Center in which they looked at generational voting, leaning a Republican or voting Republican and leaning Democrat, voting Democrat, and looked at not only differences among various generations, but also among those born earlier in a generation or later in a generation. Older baby boomers consistently had a more Democratic imprint than younger. The millennials of all ages favoring the Democratic Party by large margins, older Gen Xers more Republican than younger Gen Xers. When you look at your life and your generation, and if you don't mind saying what generation you're from, that would be interesting. What about your voting? Do you find yourself voting, even though you may not identify yourself as a Republican or a Democrat, but you're voting over the course of a lifetime, has it changed at all? Or do you find that you're pretty much... your political inclinations are where they were when you first cast a ballot. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR2.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, where we love to hear your comments. So leave them there. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To your phone calls now. Owen in Green Bay is our first caller. Hi, Owen.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Great show today.
Thanks.
Well, I just basically wanted to kind of be a voice for those who are kind of like me. I'm 30. I identify with the Independent Party. And I think most of us just don't like, in our generation, labels, because a label tells you how you're supposed to act, you know, or how you're supposed to be. And some of the values, some of the Republican values, I don't agree with. But at the same time, some of the Democratic values I don't agree with. We usually just look for the person who is right for the job at the time. for instance, economy. We had a big economy issue, you know, back when we were down, and I loved Herman Cain, but obviously he couldn't make it. I was going to vote for Herman Cain, but I didn't like, you know, Romney's values, so I ended up voting for Obama. Like, so, you know, it could go either way mm-hmm. with independence, and I think, well, in our generation, this is why we have non-denominational Christians, and that's growing because, you know, if you're Southern Baptist, you have to be a certain way, and if you're Seventh-day Adventist, you have to be a certain way, and I think we just want to, you know, do the right thing for our values.
Jocelyn.
Well, I think to some extent, as I said, millennials are more likely, those in the younger generation are more likely to call themselves independent, but we've seen a shift in the direction of more people calling themselves independent across the generation. So even in older generations, we've seen a little bit of a movement in the direction of people calling themselves independent. But I do think that there's some other data that suggests that, you know, people do like to be able to assert independence and freedom from labels. And that's distinct from the choices that you make.
Thanks, Owen, for your call. Go ahead, Jocelyn.
Well, I was going to say, but again, I think what we're seeing is fewer and fewer people doing what Owen said, which is sort of splitting their vote and voting one way in one election and another way in another election. It still definitely happens, but the incidence of that is lower than it used to be.
Lynn is next. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I am 61 years old, and so I'm on the younger side of the baby boomers. And my parents were Republican, and I always voted Republican in the beginning. And then, I guess, you know, Vietnam War, and my parents took a different side on that than I did, and I have always done a lot of op-ed reading in the New York Times and you know, just both from Madison and Milwaukee and tried to figure out things on my own. I find that in local elections, because our county is so Republican, I vote Republican in our county, but I guess I would say my leanings now at my age are more Democratic than they are Republican. And I think the Republican Party has lost a lot of us. They've just gotten kind of out there. So maybe I am an independent, and I didn't really, even the young man before me, he really stated things very, very well.
And was there a time, you mentioned Vietnam, was that the time when you started voting Democratic, Lynn, or was it after that?
Yeah, Nixon, I just couldn't tolerate whatsoever, and I just, that was pretty much the end of my Republicanism, was Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I loved Carter. I just thought he was just such a genuine person, and, you know, liked a lot of the things that he did and a lot of the things he stood for and continues to stand for. He doesn't just walk the walk or talk the talk, he walks the walk. And that's what I really always liked about him and still do at 90 years old.
Thank you, Lynn, for the call. Jocelyn.
I think those observations, I think, are very in keeping with some of the data that we were talking about, that sort of the way that she's talking about the experience with the early impressions of growing up around the Nixon era and how that informed her choices is then is some of what we were talking about earlier.
She mentioned her family. I don't know if Pew has done studies on this, but I'm interested in how many of us vote as our parents voted when we first vote, we hope at the age of 18, and continue that pattern, or there is some major event like the war in Vietnam that changes our mind about things, or the economy falling apart, or whatever the issue is. Do you know, do we start out voting how our families have voted?
That's certainly an influence. We've done some studies on this in the past, not in the last couple of years, but certainly how your parents voted influences your party ID, particularly at an early age. But, you know, it's certainly not destiny. It may be, you know, there may be all kinds of reasons that you choose to vote differently than your parents or the same as your parents, but oftentimes it does have an imprint in the same kind of way that I talked about the environment in which the political environment at the time that you grew up. But it's just one of many factors.
Mm. And then I wonder about families where, as in my family, they voted differently. So I wonder, you know, why the decision is made to vote is, there's probably some psychological study on all of that, right? Lynn, thanks for the call. David is next in New Auburn. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. I was born in 19...
You were born when? Ah, David, we lost the connection. Call us back if you have a moment to do so. Jack is next in Viola. Hi, Jack.
Ah, good afternoon. Good subject. I'm a baby boomer, middle of the baby room, 52, so I'm 63 now. But the interesting thing is, I voted Democratic ever since I could vote. But recently I've been talking to the younger generation, like 20 to 30, 33, and they don't have the kind of experience that I had. You know, I really was brought up into the middle class by what the Democrats were doing, right? And most of my debates on Facebook and stuff happens to do with the people who are Generation Xers that came up under Reagan. And it's very interesting that my experience, they want to know about that, which is really kind of interesting at my age to hear that the younger people say, what, that wasn't the way it was always? I said, yeah, you should have had Governor Gail Nolan Nelson or Senator Gail Nolan Nelson or Foxfire or Patrick Lucey. Any of those, you know, and they say, really, was it like that? And so there's this crossover, you know, communicating between that. And just for your information, my parents were a live and let live Republicans out in the rural area, and I just, you know, decided, you know, I'm going to go be a Democrat, and, you know, Vietnam kind of split us down the middle, you know. But anyway, yeah. I just want to comment about how there's this generation crossover between older ones, baby boomers, and some of the newer ones that come in, the millennials, I maybe think that you were talking about.
Yeah, thanks, Jack, for your call. Jocelyn.
Well, I think, you know, some of what you just said, I think, reminds me of the way different generations approach many political issues and political values in society today. So when I think about a lot of the key political debates that are happening together today, there's clear evidence that there are generational differences on a lot of them. In particular, I know you didn't quite mention this, Jack, but the social issues of the day. So, for instance, there are big differences in how different generations view things like homosexuality or view immigration or view, marijuana legalization. And I think some of that comes down to the experiences that people were socialized to or grew up with around these issues. So younger, on all of those issues, younger generations tend to be much more socially liberal, so more supportive of accepting homosexuality, more supportive of immigration, more supportive of marijuana legalization, more supportive of environmental laws and policies. So some of that, I think, has to do with the way those issues have evolved over time and what it was like to experience those public policy conversations and debates.
And we have one more call for you, Robert in Luxembourg. Hi, Robert.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
One of the things that I thought was really interesting, great conversation. When I came of age as a voter, I'm a baby boomer, born in 1952. I considered myself a moderate, maybe slightly right of center, identified as a Republican. And as time has gone along, I think I'm in the same place, but the party has, drifted farther right. So, I mean, I would identify myself probably as slightly left of center now, even though, I'm still the same person with the same beliefs. I just think the center has moved a little bit one way or the other. So, just kind of an interesting thing. I mean, I would have told you I was a Democrat a Republican up until a couple of years ago, and now I would say, it shifted away from where I thought it should be.
And what about the Democratic Party? Do you think it has shifted as well, Robert?
It has. It's farther left, maybe, than I am comfortable with. But I think the middle has kind of moved. The middle is in the same place it has been, but it's just as the parties identify themselves. Sometimes I feel like a fish out of water, if you will, that I'm probably the most represented group of folks in that, the moderates don't have a voice in either party much anymore. My liberal friends would say I was conservative. My conservative friends would say I was liberal. So it's kind of an odd duck.
Well, I hope you get along with everybody. It sounds like you would.
I do. I think I do anyway. But I do get sucked into interesting political arguments. That's for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, nothing wrong with those. They're fun. Jocelyn?
Well, I mean, this raises a lot of other questions. So, as you mentioned, one of the big projects that we've worked on here at the Pew Research Center is studying political polarization in America, and in particular in the public. And we put out a big report last year, and we talked a lot about how the parties actually, the people who identify with the parties have grown further apart ideologically. So that's exactly what he was just speaking to, which is that, you know, while to be sure most Americans actually are in the middle, at least if you define political spaces, like people who have some liberal views and some conservative views, that's where many, many Americans are. But more and more people who identify with or lean to the Democratic Party are more liberal in the combination of political values they have, while people who identify with or lean to the Republican Party are more conservative in the combination. So the two parties are further apart than they've been. So I think that expression of feeling that, there's some evidence in the data that that's in fact what's happened.
Hmm. Jocelyn, thank you very much for being with us and for doing this study. Jocelyn Kiley, Associate Director of Research for the Pew Research Center, and we're talking about the study that they just released, a report at the end of April focusing on partisanship in different age groups with very interesting findings. I guess the next half hour has been with us before, and he's going to make the case for putting the voting age in this country at 17. He talks about Tacoma Park, Maryland has done it. Iowa has done it, too, for their caucuses. Scotland went down to the age of 16 for its recent independence referendum. And he says evidence suggests it will boost informed participation in our democracy over time. Peter Levine is joining us. Peter is Associate Dean for Research and Professor of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Tufts University's College of Citizenship and Public Service. He also has an appointment in the philosophy department. He graduated from Yale with a degree in philosophy, studied at Oxford on a Rhodes Scholarship, is the author of We Are the Ones We've Been Waiting For, The Promise of Civic Renewal in America, and he's written other books as well, including the Developing the Future of Democracy, it's called Developing the Next Generation of American Citizens. So what do you think? Voting age at 17. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And Professor, thank you very much for joining us again. It's nice to have you on the air again.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the lesson.
All right, good. Well, I hope you'll enjoy it this time. You know, I forgot this happened. I don't know why. Maybe I was doing something else in 1971. I remember it, but I don't remember all the politics involved. In 1971, we passed the 26th Amendment, went down from 21 to 18, and you remind us, I forgot this, 38 states passed the measure in 3 months, the fastest passage of any amendment in U.S. history. Why did that happen, and do you think we could do the same if we lowered it to 17?
I think it happened because of Vietnam. It happened because we were drafting young people to fight. And no, so honestly, I don't think it would happen at the same speed. In fact, my real proposal is pretty modest, is to have some experimentation with it, both in state primaries and caucuses, and also in cities, because cities are allowed to do that for their own municipal elections. I don't think it's going to sweep the nation, but I do think it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. You talk about voting being habitual. Once you vote, you're more likely to vote again. The other hand, if you don't vote, maybe you're more likely to not vote again. And where we find ourselves at the age of 17, where you might have more guidance, you can talk about voting in school, it seems to be a better age than when you're 18 and maybe you're at college, maybe you're not. It's more difficult to vote when others around you may not be voting.
That's right. So this isn't an argument for, you know, let people vote as young as possible. I mean, I'm not in that camp.
Right.
I don't want 13-year-olds to vote. It's really an argument for letting the voting age overlap with high school, really, to put it simply, because then you're still in your community where you grew up, and also because, more importantly, maybe because you can actually teach about the election in the high school. Of course, definitely don't teach the kids who they should vote for, or even yell at them that they must vote, but tell them that there's an election, how you vote, how you register, how you follow the news, and is, I think there's a pretty good evidence that that would actually boost their turnout and then get them in the habit, which would then they would then stay with.
I was really captivated by the elections in Scotland last year. I found myself up at 2 in the morning watching those elections because everybody seemed so engaged. But and I was interested in hearing from 16-year-olds who could vote in the election, and they seemed to be, I don't know what their turnout was, but they seemed to be very engaged, and they were doing the very thing you were talking about, learning about the issues in class.
Right, great. Yeah, and turnout is said to be very high. It was high for the whole population, but it's said to have been very high for the 16-year-olds as well.
Mm-hmm. You talk about this being a strategy for expanding the electorate in the long term. We do have, and it's so sad, one of the lowest turnout rates of any democracy in the world. What makes you believe that if you voted at this age, you would continue to vote?
Well, there's quite a lot of evidence that people do keep voting once they started voting, and I think it's partly a habit. I mean, I use that word. So it's partly kind of in our minds that we've learned to vote and we repeat the habit. But the other thing that's maybe just as important is once you voted, you've established a voting record, which is public record. And so the parties and candidates and campaigns know about you, and then they go after you to try to vote again. So a lot of it has to do with who is contacted. And we have a significant problem that 18-year-olds just aren't on anybody's lists, and they're very often not contacted in campaigns.
And yet they're affected, as you remind us, by public policy and especially by schools, police, and employment programs.
Right. I mean, so if you ask why should they vote, why should we even care? I mean, there are a couple of reasons, but one reason is because, you know, they're really affected. They're at the kind of knife edge of a lot of politics and policy. And not only are they affected and should have some influence, but they also have a perspective that's valuable. So kids right now, young adults in San Francisco are advocating to get the voting age lowered to 17, and it seems really important to me there because it's a city without that many families, actually. It's a city with an adult population heavily, and they do have a public school system, though, and the people in it don't really have that much say. So it seems important for 17, 18-year-olds to be able to weigh in on what's going on in their schools.
Tell us what's happening in municipalities and even in states. You mentioned the Iowa caucuses. Where are young people younger than 18 allowed to vote, and how did that happen?
I don't have a complete list. It's sporadic. I'm pretty sure that there was at least one Chicago city election where young people could vote when they were 17, and once in Baltimore. It comes and goes a little bit. It's more common in primaries because often the justification is, well, you're going to be 18 and vote in an election, a general election. You ought to be able to vote on who makes it to the general, so that we shouldn't allow a 17-year-old to vote in case they're in that category. But then there has been a recent boomlet of little municipalities passing or considering these laws for their own cities. Lowell, Massachusetts, a couple of Maryland jurisdictions, and then San Francisco, I think it's going to be on the ballot for a city referendum.
You also talk about pre-registration at 17.
Right, that's a really good idea. It's also not very radical. It's a policy that lets you register when you're 17 in school. You could even make it 16. You don't get to vote though until you turn 18. But the act of registration just automatically rolls over so that you're a registered voter when you're 18. And a bunch of states have done that: Florida, Hawaii. North Carolina did it for a while, but then the state legislature repealed it. But I think that was bad. So it's really a good idea. In some ways, you could ask the question, why do people have to go to the trouble of individually registering at least a month before an election and then register? I mean, no business would say, you know, you have to register for your coffee and then a month later you come in and buy it. So we need to make the registration process closer to automatic. And one way to do that is to tell high school students they have several years in which to register, and then they will become registered voters when they turn 18.
Let's go to phone calls. I think we'll have many for you. We're talking about, is it time to lower our voting age to 17? Our guest has laid out the reasons why that might make sense, and coupled with the first hour of the program, that if you're involved politically when you're younger, you may vote more often during the course of your lifetime. And what do you think? Is it too young, or is it a perfect time because you're in school and there could be courses in civics classes, if there still are any of those classes, where you talk about the elections and the local issues, or some of the national issues. What is the appropriate age to be able to vote in this country? Would it make us more involved in the political process? Would it increase the numbers of people in this country who vote? What do you think? 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. We always love to read your comments on Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And let's start with Sheree in Waupun. Hi, Sheree.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I am originally from Florida, and I was born in the early 70s. And my dad was a minister, so, you know, I grew up Southern Baptist. But I was a voracious reader, and my dad was, you know, heavily involved in politics. And, you know, consequently, in Florida at least, you could register when you were 17 and a half. And to me, it was a big deal to do that because, number one, I felt it was a step toward adulthood. Number two, it was also, for me, since I was black and grew up in the South, that was a big deal for me to want to exercise that right. That's something I want to make sure I never took for granted. So, and then I had a librarian that turned me on to Ayn Rand, whom I subsequently hated. And, you know, and that actually influenced my vote, of course, as well. But, you know, and now I'm a, you know, pretty much a lifelong Democrat and somewhat independent now. But it's been really interesting. And I will say that I was already interested by the time I was 17. I already had opinions that I wanted to express. And I certainly appreciated the fact that I could do it early, and I felt it was a rite of passage.
Hmm. Thank you so much for your call. Professor Levine.
Yeah, great story. That's the Pre-Registration Act in Florida that I mentioned, and I think it's a great idea, just for the reason the caller said. I also love the fact that the suggestion of a very politically charged book didn't brainwash her.
Right.
There's a lot of evidence that that's the case, that actually, yeah, that in other words, that high school kids aren't that easily brainwashed, and that it's actually good to give them stuff that's intriguing and interesting. And I'm on the opposite side of most issues from Ayn Rand, but I'm fine with a passionate librarian giving it to a student and letting the student, you know, it's not going to determine their voting pattern, but it might get them interested.
Thanks very much, Sheree, for your call. Let's go to Kurt in Elkhorn. Hi, Kurt.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Kathleen.
Hi, Kurt.
You know, I'll tell you what. All I'm hearing from this guest is, oh, I hope we can get a 17-year-old to get into the habit of voting. Why don't we give them, why don't we do what other countries do? Give the whole doggone country the day off to vote. If we want to bring up higher, if we want to bring our rolls up higher, eliminate the problem that the rest of the population seems to keep saying that they have. No time to do it. Give them the whole day off.
Professor Levine.
Yeah, well, I'd vote for it. I appreciate the comment, and I'd vote for it. I have to say I'm not completely convinced it would work. You know, and not just saying this as a research geek, not that I'm opposed to the idea, but we in some ways we've made the time problem less acute, and because we started to allow early voting without excuse in many states, and mail voting, and you know, Oregon, for example, allows voting only by mail. They don't even have anymore. And so you would think that would give us some of the advantages that you'd get from a voting holiday, and yet it hasn't really helped. On the other hand, the best case I could make for the voting holiday, apart from the fact that it's very extremely well intentioned, is that it would certainly draw everyone's attention to the election, because not only would they have the convenience, which would I don't think would help that much, but they would also be all this, you know, why do we have the day off today, Mom? Because of the election. So it would certainly be a publicity campaign that would have some impact. Mm. Although people forget what Labor Day is for and what Veterans
Right.
Day is for.
They all go shopping.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
yeah.
Washington's birthday. Let's go to the mall.
So that's the worst case scenario. So it's to be honest, it's not my favorite reform suggestion, although I wouldn't stand in the way.
Kurt, thanks for the call. Jenny in Deerfield, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment is I'm a 19-year-old, about to be 20, and I have only voted one time. It was in the governor election, this past one, and the reason, I guess, that I didn't vote before was because following high school, I went right into college, and it's in a very small town. It was very difficult for me to try and navigate going and actually voting, and that was for the presidency election, too, 2012. And I don't feel very motivated to vote, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I was brought up to be very excited and interested in the election process, and then went to college and learned a lot more about life and just real reality, and it kind of made me not really want to have anything to do with it anymore. But I do think that lowering the voting age, or like your guest said, allowing 16-year-olds to register would actually probably help a lot with that and give people more information. I think that would be a really good idea.
Professor.
Oh, I appreciate that the callers voted once. That's better.
That's better than not at all.
For that age. And I guess I totally resonate to the frustration of voting and the way the political system works. Regardless of where you're on the political spectrum, it's pretty ugly. And, just to add to the problems, lots of campaigns aren't at all competitive, and so that, your vote doesn't make that much difference in those situations. I still say we got to keep voting because, although it can be painful in the short term, because the political system really does respond to the types of people who vote. And if there are lots of 19-year-olds voting, you really will get different candidates running
sure
with
would.
Different platforms.
And there are so many elections that are really quite important in the scheme of things in which very few people vote.
Well, that's true. So quite a few college campuses, the dirty little secret is that if the students all voted, they could actually dominate the small towns. I don't even know if that would be a good thing. But it's true. I mean, the turnout is so low, and it can be pretty motive in local elections, especially if they're off-year. It can be pretty motivating to college and high school students to point out to them how many votes they actually have.
You don't even know.
In fact,
a
great example of that is the Iowa caucuses in 2008, which sent Barack Obama to the White House. If he hadn't beaten Hillary Clinton, then he would not have been president. And actually, 16-year-olds could vote in the Iowa caucuses, and they did vote, and the turnout was a very small number of people. That's the way the caucuses work. But those high school students actually made a significant difference.
More phone calls in a moment. Our guest this hour is making a case for why the voting age should be 17. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. He says most of us will not vote unless we see people around us voting, and that's where we get the idea that it's a civic responsibility. Voters at age 18 are particularly unlikely to experience that kind of stimuli. You might go off to college, or you might be getting a job, and you're not seeing people vote. And it's more difficult, I think, to vote when you're at college as well. So why not start the habit early? And once you vote, you are more likely to vote again. So we're looking at those places that have various municipalities lowered the age. Does it make sense to do that? We welcome your thoughts. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls for Professor Peter Levine, Associate Dean for Research, Professor of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Tufts University's College of Citizenship and Public Service. He also is in the Philosophy Department, and he's the author of several books. We interviewed him last year, was it, about one of his books, The Future of Democracy, Developing the Next Generation of American Citizens. He's also the author of We Are the Ones We Have Been Waiting For, The Promise of Civic Renewal in America. Jesse in Milwaukee, hello.
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead, Jesse.
Yes, I wanted to know, I was curious if one of the challenges to passage is the perhaps there's predictable partisan consequences. And if you believe that maybe that was the reason that they overturned the law in North Carolina.
Yeah, that's a smart question. And what I'm saying, and I'm very sincere about this, is that the partisan consequences are not that predictable. And if you think a little bit longer term, they're not predictable at all. It is true that in the last decade, this past 10 years or so, young people have tilted pretty strongly Democratic. And in a state like North Carolina, also Wisconsin, you see a pattern where the young people under, if the elections were settled by people under 40, it would be all blue states, and if it's over 40, it's all red. So there really is a partisan battle, and indeed that is why the North Carolina legislature got rid of a bunch of provisions, including early registration and same day voting and other things. However, they're also short-sighted because over the longer term, Republicans have done perfectly well with young people. As recently as the year 2000, they split the youth vote with Democrats, and they should, instead of trying to block young people from voting, they should be trying to get them to vote for Republicans. So it doesn't have to be partisan, and I don't even think it's in their self-interest to make it partisan, but it was partisan in North Carolina.
Thanks for the call. Brianna in Minocqua. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
And thank you to your guests for bringing this up. I've actually been voting. I'm 34 right now. I began voting when I was 18. My mom took me to get registered the first time I was eligible. And that's one of the biggest things that I'm the most thankful for of all the different experiences that I've had in life. I've been able to experience getting to do that with my mom. Not only have I voted in every election, every minor election as well, I've also become involved in volunteering politically. It's been interesting to me over the years, interesting to me to actually watch the counts come in on election day and watch those numbers coming in. I think there's a lot of people that don't realize how close some of their local races can be and how much those can affect them. But anyhow, I just am completely in favor of lowering the voting age to 17. I think it's a great idea. The one of the other things that I also agree with is what a previous caller said about changing it so that people have the entire day off. I think that's a great idea because there's not enough people out there that are able to take time off of work and get out to the polls. And everyone knows that, well, maybe not everyone, but it's been shown in so many cases how difficult it can be in areas like Milwaukee or larger cities in general sometimes. But thank you again for taking
my
call. I just wanted to say, keep it up. All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks very much for the call. Professor Levine.
Well, you have a call-in audience that's remarkably friendly to this. I've done
yes.
Radio in a couple other contexts, and usually I get a lot of questions about, but aren't these kids ignorant of politics and just going to vote to legalize marijuana and a lot of other kinds of questions like that? But this is a very friendly audience with a lot of avid politically engaged people, too. So I certainly always appreciate that. I wish we could bottle the enthusiasm and sort of spread it around.
I wish we could, too. Is there any serious consideration of doing nationally what you're talking about or not?
I would love to say there is. I don't think so. A number of other countries have done it, but I think it's worth some distance from even considering it at the national level in the United States.
Why have other countries done it?
Yeah, I don't know the details of that. I mean, you know, I think the caller asked about partisanship is probably partly got an explanation of that in other countries, because for instance, I think in Scotland, the pro-independence national side was hoping the 16-year-olds would vote that way, and they got that on their side. So sometimes it lines up with some kind of partisan motivation. Still a good thing, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, you remind us that in 1971, when we passed the 26th Amendment, we were asking, and it was a valid question, how could 18-year-olds be too immature to vote if they were mature enough to wear the uniform in a foreign land? There isn't a huge difference between 17 and 18. If you have 17-year-olds in school and can teach civics in relationship to voting and concentrate on what the elections are, it seems like a perfect time to prepare people for, you know, being mature enough to wear the uniform or go out in the workforce or go to college.
We also treat them in the criminal justice system like they're adults to a large extent.
Mm-hmm.
If we can do that, we should let them vote.
Thank you so much for being with us. I hope you'll join us again. Thanks,
a
Professor.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Professor Peter Levine, our guest this half hour, and he was suggesting voting at 17 in this country. Our first guest, Jocelyn Kiley, Associate Director of Research at Pew, looking at how various generations have voted. And what's remarkable is that you tend to be where you were. If you voted Republican when you were young, you tend to, unless there's some kind of major event in your generation that makes you switch from Democratic to Republican or Republican to Democratic, it's where you stay. And she looked at where the generations have stayed and why, a little bit about why. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this interesting hour, and thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. We have news coming up momentarily. Stay with us. We love doing history conversations, and particularly American presidents. And so we will look at the life of James Madison, our fourth president, one of the founding fathers, and Lynn Cheney will be joining us, hour two of our show.